It's not disturbing.
Good morning, everybody. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and it is June the 27th. And we're here today to deal with first 1032 related to the Oregon Promise. And Mr. Wilson is going to give us some background where we're heading on that. And then at 9:15, and we have to wait till then because of notice problems, we'll be dealing with Senate Bill 187, and some amendments are coming, and they didn't give notice soon enough, so we'll have to wait till 9:15 to do that. Is that correct, Mr. Wilson?
That is right, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that, because we finally got the amendment back this morning, so we posted it at 8:15, so we can't hear it till 9:15. So I don't think 1032 will take more, because I don't think anyone signed up.
Open public hearing on 1032. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, 1032 comes to you as sort of round two on Oregon Promise. You passed Senate Bill 55 early in session that took care of the $10 million annual cap for this current biennium for 15-17. This bill, among the things included in this bill, is removing that cap permanently, because the program does now cost more than $10 million a year. Other factor or features in this bill is that the grant reduces $50 for each term a person receives the grant, and it allows certain students that don't meet that timeline, which I believe is 6 months after high school graduation generally. There are certain groups in this bill, ag student organization activities, or others that have a significant hardship to maintain their eligibility for whatever reason. There's a waiver for them to get around that enrollment soon after graduation. So, Mr. Chair, this bill has passed the Senate Ed Committee. It looks like it was 5-0. And just a note that this bill will be work session later. There is going to be a work group starting to meet today for probably a day and a half to deal with Oregon Promise, because it does not have full funding right now. So there's going to be some discussion about whether to cut back or how to deal with that. That meeting will start today of a small work group, and that will come back to Ways and Means, whether it's this subcommittee or Capital Construction, to finish and put anything more in this bill that has to be done.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilson, is Mark Johnson on that work group? Do you know who's picked it?
I do not think he is, but
thank you.
Mr. Chair, you are.
I believe that the work group is myself, Senator Hass, Senator Cruz, and Barbara, and Jean, and Susan McLean. So that's this gang of six. Representative Lively.
So I have probably missed something, or I read it and I forgot, but if we remove the cap, I'm still trying to understand, though. So then what does set full funding, or what is full funding?
Full funding is for this next biennium is approximately $48
million.
Would be for next biennium.
Projections.
That. Yes. Right now, the co-chairs have allocated around $40 million for it. So if they stay within that $40 million, there's going to have to be some changes in the eligibility at this point in time.
I mean, understanding
Senator
that. Thank you.
Roland.
Understanding that you're going to get a whole new set of group people, plus the group that we had last time, and then another new group coming in the next part of the biennium. So you've got three cohorts that are going to be moving through all at the same time, receiving the money, and then a fourth one at the very end of the second biennium. So that's why it's getting there.
Senator Thompson.
And I think at the kind of the beginning of the session, they were kind of guessing 40, but now that
right.
number seems to be up to 48.
Yes,
so that's the problem.
Mr. Chair, members, basing it on the enrollments in basically the first two quarters of operation, now they're saying 48, and it's the program is popular.
Yeah.
And if you look at
go ahead.
If you look at, we had to change the 10.
Yeah.
from the first year when we thought it was going to be the smallest, and it went to 13 or something.
Approximately.
So obviously it's one of those programs that kids are taking advantage of, students are taking advantage of.
Okay. So we will be, this group of six will be meeting as soon as we can all get together, and hopefully coming up with recommendations on how we go forward with this program at a funding level of about $40 million, which is what's been allocated. Additional questions of staff on this? Senator Roblin, anything you want to add, having chaired the policy committee?
I mean, I'm sad that we're going to have to adjust it, because I think it's been, the selling point has been all kids. And, you know, we had a year ago, we had a University of Oregon professor come in and say, why do we say that K-12 is what we should fund? It used to be K-8. You know, this country has changed, and what we need as a productive member is really through community college anymore. Everybody would hear that. It could be vocational, it could be other things, but all kids, all students need to continue their education if they really want to find that place that they fit in really well. And all this is saying is basically we want to give that opportunity to every student in Oregon. And I think it's an easy statement to say. It's an important one. It is, has a cost with it. That's the problem, and we'll have to figure out what that looks like if we have to cut it back. And I understand that we don't have the money, so we have to do some things. But, you know, for a whole generation, you know, I look back at the California experience back in the 60s and 70s when they funded college education for everybody almost. It was, and it, look at the economy in California since that time. It was doing pretty well before, but I will tell you, having an educated workforce will help anybody. I look at North Carolina, what they did a number of years ago with the triangle and the education stuff that they put into that, and the boom of North Carolina industrially, all other kinds of things, all because they had the
research triangle.
The research people. Yeah, the research triangle. It's amazing. It's pretty clear if you get your educated workforce, people come, because that's something that's really important to them. So I just hope we remember that.
And if you look at what happened in California with Prop 13,
that was the decline.
It started going down, and and in Oregon it was Measure 5.
Yep.
Senator Thompson?
Has anybody looked at, we kind of based this program on, what, Tennessee?
Yeah.
What have their numbers continued to do? Has anybody looked at those?
Juan, have you looked at Tennessee's? Can you address that, what their enrollment patterns have been in but they've only been operating for
a year,
one year before ours, so
all
this is pretty sketchy.
Go ahead and identify yourself for the record and tell us what you know.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Juan Baez Arevalo. I'm the interim director of the Office of Student Access and Completion. What we know about Tennessee is that, similar to our program, it's been very successful. There's been a great deal of demand, just like here in Oregon. I think they are reviewing the success of it in terms of a continuous increase in applicants. And so the first year was very solid. Second year looks very solid as well. And I think as a system, they're also looking at, you know, the sustainability of it. They're now, because of, they are in their second year, they're starting to look at the outcomes, which we will be doing in a year or so.
Yeah. Okay. Questions, Madam Co-Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So are they at their goals? Are they exceeding? Do we know that?
You know, I
don't know if the goals is the right word, but.
Yeah, I'm not certain that they had a preset goal, so to speak, but it was surprising to them in terms of the participation rates in the first year. Very successful in terms of the pattern of enrollment of students, just like we're seeing the same.
Senator Thompson?
I was kind of getting to a dollar amount. Like we went from 10 to 13, now we're going kind of 40, then it's going to be 48. What, do you know their numbers?
I don't have their exact numbers, Senator Thompson. I don't have their exact numbers. We can certainly research those for you and give you what their experience has been. I know they did set aside, had some funds available, a large chunk of money to start their program. They could very quickly deplete that given their success with their program.
Senator Roblin.
So the other thing that we felt strongly about was, and we saw a little bit of information earlier on this, the amount of federal money we're getting into our state. Tennessee now has been a year and a half. Have they shown that same ability to attract that federal match money, the Pell Grants, the other kinds of stuff? Because one of the requirements for all of these is that they have to fill out the FAFSA and do all that kind of stuff. Have those dollars increased in the state of Tennessee, and we hopefully hear, or do you know?
Senator Roblin, I do not have any specific figures in terms of the results in Tennessee as in regards to Pell dollars coming into the state. As I understand it, the student population in Tennessee is very representative of all students in Tennessee. So if it is like ours, where I believe we used the term before as a Wowza effect, where we have seen a net increase, and Pell dollars coming into our state by the students enrolling into our community colleges, then they could very much be seeing the same effect in terms of a positive correlation, a positive return of dollars into the state from Pell.
Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So you mentioned outcomes. So I'm trying to understand here and I appreciate what Senator Roman said about the numbers of that. I'm trying to understand the outcomes or what we expect. Is it just the fact we expect more kids to enroll and graduate? I'm trying to understand where we measure ultimately that we have success versus just the fact that more students are going to the community college. That's the part I'm missing someplace, I guess.
Representative Lively, I think there's different ways to measure success and to measure outcomes. I think first and foremost, it would be an increase in the number of Oregonians, particularly Oregonians coming out of high school going into post-secondary education. If we use that as a measurement, thumbs up. This program has demonstrated that. If another outcome from the program that can be measured today is the retention rate, and we've seen a very strong retention rate of these students staying in the program, staying engaged in community college, and staying enrolled at a fairly high level.
And come September, we'll know even more what the retention is.
Correct. I think the ultimate outcome beyond those two results that we've already seen very positively is the attainment of certificates, diplomas, associate's degrees, or eventual transfer perhaps to a fourth-year institution if that is what the student chooses to do in their career. And I think with time, we will be able to measure that. It is a little premature right now in the first year to be able to measure that positive outcome at the very end.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Johnson's given me some of the answers about how we're doing against Tennessee, right, but I may get it wrong, so I would ask the chair to maybe ask Representative Johnson how we're doing. Well, I think also Mark and I were both in higher ed when this was working, and he did the heavy lift on this. But remember, we got some data that 24% of community college people were reaching a degree or certificate. And that was some of the impetus for this. And that's because then it was based upon how Tennessee had so many mentors to help the students succeed. But I think Representative Johnson has told me how we're doing against Tennessee. But you might want to ask him.
Okay, we just saw him wander in the room, so we're going to call Representative Johnson up.
It's my own business watching on my TV.
I don't think so.
Welcome a lot, Mark. Why don't you go ahead and
thanks, co-chairs. For the record, Mark Johnson, House District 52. I guess to answer my senator's question over here about the maybe it's the perceived creep of the cost, which I think can be, you know, it seems normal to look at that. But I think what we're missing here is the retention rates of students, and Juan can speak to this, exceeds the normal formula that the HEC would apply to this. more kids are staying in the program, therefore the cost is going up. We would expect more kids to be dropping out if we use conventional numbers that we apply to basic community colleges. But I think you saw the report a while back that we're retaining plus 90% of these students from term to term. Those numbers are like unheard of. I attended a conference in Denver on free community college back in late May, I think. And the Tennessee Promise is in the low 70s. We're retaining like 90%. And to much of that, I attribute we were able to get some investments into the colleges in the bill we had last session, mandating first-year student experiences. Every Oregon Promise student will have a first-year student experience that the colleges adapt to their own college, whatever. We've got 17 colleges. They all do it differently. But the point is there's wraparound services around each of these students that Tennessee doesn't have. Tennessee has mentors that they provide, that where each student before you even enroll have to meet with a mentor, but it's a little different. That can be just a text relationship, it can be a phone call, whatever, but we actually have hands-on programs at our colleges that are helping these students to stay. And come September, as you said, we'll know what that whole first year looks like, but I'm confident that we're going to have numbers that are going to really, I think the rest of the country will look at us and say, wow, they're doing some good stuff. So therefore, it's hard to project because we just don't know how successful the program is. But I think I've heard Senator Roblin make the point that, my gosh, if we can, as a state, for this amount of money, offer a not free but affordable college, at least first 2 years of college, that's a pretty dang good investment. And now, as I said earlier, and I was in front of you a couple of weeks ago, when we pair this with the credit transfer bill that we passed, that you all graciously passed, the full will be voting on that, I think, on Wednesday. When you combine the Oregon Promise with this credit transfer bill, not only are you going to have affordable experience, but what they earn and what they accomplish will stick with them and would be worth something, too. So there is no other state that has that 1-2 punch in place.
Senator Thompson.
Rep. Johnson, so you've worked a lot on this bill, mm-hmm. and if we come up with only 40 instead of the 48, what would your suggestion be how we deal with the NC?
That's a very difficult question. I think there's I think some low-hanging fruit would be, let's just say, means testing the copay, if you will. Right now, I think it's $50 per term per student.
Yep.
I think certain families of certain income levels could afford certainly more than that. Maybe it goes to $100, maybe it goes to $200 or something, but you could certainly mean test that. But I will say other programs, Promise programs across the country, do not means test their programs. Because if you do, then it becomes like about every other need-based ACE program that we have. Our Opportunity Grant program, obviously, Oregon Opportunity Grant, is needs-based. But I'll tell you the retention, the value of the DOP, my personal opinion, the value what the state of Oregon is getting for an Oregon Promise tuition support versus simply Oregon Opportunity Grant, which doesn't have those wraparound services around it. We're just kind of pushing money out the door. We hope it gets to where it needs to go to.
Yeah.
It's effective. But in terms of the actual effectiveness in the student, I would say dollar for dollar, there's no question that the Oregon Promise tuition waivers are more impactful than Oregon Opportunity Grant. And I may be committing heresy in the eyes of the heck or somebody, but I'm sorry.
Okay. Any other questions, Madam Co-Chair?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Johnson. On the Tennessee front, do they have a dedicated funding source for this program?
Madam Co-Chair, they do. They have a lottery-backed endowment of somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 million they're mm-hmm. using.
Wow.
A little different playing field. Mm-hmm. So they can just pull from this. They're mm-hmm. they're getting proceeds that they're using for their program.
Okay.
Additional questions for the witnesses? Thank you very much, Mark. Thanks for coming down. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that. Committee needs to understand that there are certain parameters on Oregon Promise. You have to be 6 months or less from high school graduation. It covers up to 12 hours, and there's discussion about whether that should be full-time, which is 15 hours. So that's one of the things that the newly appointed committee will be talking about. The $50 copay, there's been some people have suggested doing away with that or doubling it. Those are things we'll be talking about. There's no means testing to the program right now. So if a family's income is above a certain level, Should we cap the program? That's something we'll have to talk about. Again, Representative Johnson just made it real clear that advocates of this program do not favor means testing, and the chief advocates in this building do not favor means testing. But that's one way to obviously reduce the cost. So those are all things that we're going to be looking at and we'll have to talk about, and because there's not an infinite amount of money.
Tough decision.
Somebody would like to figure out a new revenue source so that we could fully fund the $48 million. That would be nice. I'd support anything like that. Okay, at this time, we are going to recess until 9:15.
Tax graduates.
Come back at 9:15. We'll deal with Senate Bill 187. Mr. Wilson.
First of all, you should probably close the public hearing on 1032.
Close the public hearing.
Just in terms of schedule for the remainder of the week, plan to meet on tomorrow. We'll likely do planning to the HEC budget and maybe a couple other policy bills, depending on what's ready. Thursday will be some more policy bills. I'm hoping that Department of Education will be Friday morning, probably after full Ways and Means. And I'm not sure what the weekend schedule will bring. We're fast closing down subcommittees. You may very well be one of the last subcommittees to close because of the Department of Education budget.
And Madam Co-Chair and I have been urging the big co-chairs not to shut down this subcommittee until we have completed our work, because the alternative is to shift it to a different subcommittee, capital construction. And they haven't been holding hearings on these issues and thinking about them, and the makeup of that committee is not set the way this one is in favor of education. I mean, this committee was appointed because we have, you know, some of us vast experience in education. Okay, with that, we have 20-minute recess, and we'll be back at 9:15. Good morning. I call back to order the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means on this beautiful June 27th. And we are here to deal with Senate Bill 187.
Do a work session.
Work session on Senate Bill 187.
Okay, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 187 was previously heard by the subcommittee on the 14th. The bill relates to vision screenings. You have several amendments online, a dash 2, dash 3, and a dash 5. The dash 5 is what is recommended by the Legislative Fiscal Office. It incorporates the same language as what's in the dash 2 amendment, which permits nonprofit entities to be designated by the Department of Education as a permissible provider that may provide the vision screenings. And ODE may adopt rules to prioritize the provider reimbursements if the total amount available for reimbursement exceeds the requested amounts, and also allows ODE to solicit and accept gifts, grants, and donations for deposit into the account. The dash 5 further adds some parameters to the bill and appropriates, instead of $3 million, $1 million general fund to for administering grants and reimbursements for vision screenings. The Department of Education may retain up to 10% of this amount for administrative expenses incurred as a result of issuing the reimbursements to providers. And payments from the account shall not exceed funds available, and individual student reimbursements are capped at $3.20 per student per year. And LFO recommends the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 187.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 187.
Questions on the motion? Any objection? Yes,
Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you. The Dash 5 includes my input, the Dash 2, and I really support the bill. I worked with the advocates to come up with the amendment. The amendment makes it clear that this expanded program to help nonprofits provide screenings does not replace or affect the program that was established by House Bill 3000 in 2013.
Right. Other discussion? Any objections to the motion? Motion adopted. Madam Co-Chair?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 187 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Heard the motion. Further discussion? Any objections to the motion? It's on its way to the full committee. And
Carry it on the floor. I'll carry it on Ways and Means.
Dean, you want to carry it to the full and to the House?
I'll let the representative carry it on the floor. I'll carry it.
They don't let me be on the full Ways and Means.
For good reason.
Probably. I'll be glad.
I'll owe Matt.
Get the full. And Representative Parrish will carry it on the Senate, on the House floor.
Oh, I got a pay grade, too. I don't not think Senator Devlin would like to know that. But
and
you got a demotion, as I like to say.
Senator Devlin on the Senate floor.
I think that's wise.
Yes.
Okay. Anything further to come before us today?
That is it for today.
He didn't carry many bills.
Okay. And tomorrow's schedule will be dealing with heck. Is that correct?
Oh.
And what
possibly
heck?
Some more.
What the heck? And possibly other things. There's a backlog.
Heck and darn.
So do we think, did I catch then, that we think we're done on Friday, or do we think we carry our work into Monday?
Yes,
that's right.
All of the above. Be prepared for all of the above.
There's some likelihood that this subcommittee will have to meet on Friday, hopefully to finish our work. There's still discussion about whether the House and the Senate meet on Saturday. That's a possibility. My understanding is that the House, anyway, will not meet on Sunday, which probably means the Senate will also not meet on Sunday. But then I think this committee's work will be done at the end of this week. I really doubt if we're kept open on the Monday. So I think Friday is likely the last day this subcommittee will meet. Now, we are having a party next week on, what day is it?
I believe it's Thursday, sir.
6th?
Yes.
That's Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're having a party, and it's on the House side here. Is it the second row, second floor conference room in the back? And I hope you can all come to that. I think it's at 9 o'clock in the morning on Thursday the 6th. Okay? We'll need everybody there morning. Because Co-Chair and I will have some nice little trinkets for
we'll
all.
We'll do some educating.
Okay. Co-Chair, anything further?
Show up, my people. They show sir? Up, I show up.
Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
District and my own caucus leader, I show up anyway.
Turn.
District and my own caucus leader, I show up.